Hello, I'm Stephanie Luo. Welcome to my podcast, Service Time, Confessions of a Diving Junkie, where I chinwag with people who are like me, scuba diver and chronic addicts to being underwater. During the service time today, I managed to Skype in with Natasha Grabner. She was my first junior scuba diver student and possibly one of my best students. When I first certified her, she just turned 10. 5 years on, she has accumulated enough diving experiences even more than many adult divers in their lifetime. Like her father once described her fondly, this girl has more balls than the boys in her class.
Tasha, how are things?
Yeah, I'm a lot less stressed now, more relaxed, especially because school's over, so currently my summer holidays. But I'm still quite occupied with a lot of things, even though I'm not going anywhere.
What have you planned?
I have kickboxing basically 4 times a week now, along with football 2 times a week. So that's like sports 6 out of 7 days, which is really tiring. But yeah, I'm just trying to improve a lot of my, like, refining my skills, and hopefully I can be fit and back to school compared to, like, my friends who are traveling in Europe.
I'd like to start with the question of, where was your last memorable dive?
Okay, there's this one dive trip that's still engraved in my mind to this day, which is in Puerto Galera. So me, my family, and my diving guide, this was the most terrifying yet exciting experience that we've ever come across. It was in Crystal Bay, and that's known for its, like, strong outward current. So halfway through our dive, I think, was when we were met with one of the down currents, and it was extremely strong. While we were ascending, there was like a huge whirlpool just around us, and we were spinning around. And honestly, we didn't expect anything, because our dive guide told us that he never came across anything like it. So we thought maybe it calmed down a little bit. He was like over-exaggerating, but it was really scary. But I was happy to have met an experience like that, because it's just like an amazing story you can tell your friends and your family.
What was going through your mind? Because being in the current, in a strong current, is never a fun thing.
Yeah, definitely you cannot panic through situations like that, because it just really doesn't help. So I just followed my dive guide, just did whatever he instructed us to do, because obviously he's probably the most experienced out of all of us, especially like in a dive site like this where he knows what he's doing, because we have never been to that dive site before. We don't live in Puerto Galera, so we don't know what it's like, the conditions there. So I just followed my dive guide, because my parents did the same thing. Yeah, we were all safe at the end, so really thankful for that.
Yeah, it's good that way that you and I can still chat now. Otherwise, it would be an entirely different conversation.
Yeah.
You're obviously not being able to travel because of COVID. And I understand you've actually done some divings in Hong Kong as well and pick up some new skill, like underwater photography. What did you get up to when you were doing that?
Yeah, so I took this underwater photography course to, like, refine my skills and improve my photography in some way. But I've tried to learn more editing as well on the top of that. So, yeah, I don't know. It's helped me in some way. It's benefited. Like, I definitely know, like, aperture now. Like, I know how to set it and everything. So I'm really happy about that. And I haven't been able to dive as much recently now, but hopefully in the future, I'm able to produce better photos.
Out of your collection, let's just look at your IG account, your underwater one.
I haven't seen it in a while.
It's okay. I don't care. But looking at the photos that you posted on your IG, out of the lot, name one that you're most proud of and why.
Okay, let me see. Okay, my most memorable one, and I've actually put this as my profile picture for the longest time, is when I first started out, probably one of my first goes at editing photos, the nudie bump, the purple and white striped one. I called it Guadalina Rubro. I don't know how to pronounce it, but that's the scientific name for it. That picture of it is probably one of my most favorite ones, because I first started out, that was one I was most proud of at that time, and still to this day, because I was able to capture that background. I didn't know how to at that time. I didn't have any experience. And I always wanted to know, like, what it was like to just have to focus on that subject itself. So I remember how long it took me. It took me so long just to try to perfect that. It was like, oh, this isn't good enough. It's not bright enough. So I tried like to change the contrast and the white balance and everything like that. And when I finally got it perfected, like in my mind, yeah, it was just amazing. I love the shape of it and the resulting picture.
Was that on the night?
No, it wasn't. I think this was in day dive. Yeah.
Okay. So how did you get the black background of that photo?
I used photo editing to just like blacken the background. I just darkened the background, blacked it, darkened the background, and just focus on the center.
Hey, so if you crop it further in so you get much closer up,
yeah,
can you do a very nice sharp crop from it? I'm just looking at it now.
Yeah, it definitely was. Like, the further in you zoom in, you actually see, like, how sharp it is. Definitely could have fixed that probably, like, now compared to then, because that was, like, when I first started out. So I still have some, like, minor flaws to the photo, which I think it'll be really cool if I actually could, like, finish editing it and try refining it a little bit.
Yeah. The photos that you've got so far, they're all very much mock dive creature, that macro, small. And so when you go diving, what are your top three underwater creatures that you will always go and look for? Not necessarily like needing to take photo, but you will always keep an eye out and just see if they're actually around.
Okay, first one, always nudibranchs. I love nudibranchs because there's so many of them that come in like different sizes, different shapes, different colors. There's so many species out there. There's even like a huge book on that, and it's just amazing because like I want to find new ones that I haven't seen before. And especially like in Hong Kong, there are nudibranchs, but it's really hard to find. If you find like a nudibranch in Hong Kong, it's like a treasure, basically. Because it's so rare.
Okay. For the listener who don't know what nudibranch is and why there's so many different colors, can you share what you know about them?
Okay. I've always told like my friends or like relatives who don't know what the underwater creatures as well, I would explain that it's like an underwater sea but with like different colors and different shapes. And you can just find them underwater, usually commonly in different places around the world, like Southeast Asia, as in like Thailand and Indonesia, not so much in Hong Kong, but they're amazing. Like they have to move slowly, like slugs do. They act the same way. I don't know if they belong to the same family.
Yeah, the variation of it is incredible. And I think to this day, it's still not clear as how they can literally multiply. They're literally mutant. Constantly. Yeah. All sorts of weird and thing. And say, oh, you're nudibranch as well. My gosh. What are the other underwater creatures that you always look for?
Shrimp as well. Like whenever I see the bubble corals or like different like soft corals, I always try to look through because usually they have little shrimps hiding in them. Mm-hmm. And they're like dancing and it's really fun to just look at. They're just like moving with the waves and the current. And if they're like moving and dancing along with something, it'd be really cool.
So they've got like different colors, right? There's a harlequin, there's the see-through. Yeah. And they also get the red and the orange and white, the dancing, sexy dancing shrimps with the tail lifting up. Those are really cute. I like them. And in the soft coral, you also find other cohabitees in those places, but it's not just shrimps. What else do you also see?
I don't know, but sometimes if it's a crab, I don't really know the names of the other ones. I've forgotten, but there's a lot of different ones, but that's what they are. And there's like tons of different species you can find on a single like coral. I mean, different species of shrimp, so like two different species on one coral along with a crab, that's like the jackpot. But yeah, it's quite common to find it on soft coral and stuff.
Yeah. You look at that. Oh my God, the ecosystem there.
It's like a little house.
Do you take photos of them much? Or do you try to take photos of them?
Yeah, I have actually. I have. Yeah, I posted one on my Instagram actually of one of the crabs. I think it's like an orangutan crab. And it was a bubble coral. I thought it was really cool because it was like on the edge. So it was a really good place to take a photo. And I used that same kind of technique with the black background, try it out. That was like something I was generally like interested in, like a technique I was interested in applying.
Yeah. These are really weird, wild looking crab. They're tiny, but they're super hairy.
Yeah, exactly.
And they really are like orangutan when you look at them. So yeah. You've been to Bali, you've dived into London.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. And what was the night dive for you?
I remember one of the night dives, we were on a shipwreck. I think, I don't know what the shipwreck was called. It's a really famous site. Oh, no, Toowoomba, I think.
Yeah, the wreck is a new set in the beach.
Yeah, exactly. That was really cool. There were so many fish and they were massive, like twice the size of what you'd usually see, probably more than that, like 10 times. They're huge. And there's also like the fish, I don't know what it's called, but like they had like little dents in their head. And it was very interesting for me.
Yeah, if you were a comic fan, they might have just come out of Marvel's comic. Or Marvel's have taken the inspiration from those creatures and to put it into the comic, because those are the things you just don't expect them. Or you don't expect them to actually exist until you see them and they are there. So it's actually quite fun. Yeah. Okay. What other creature you also look for? We have only gone to two.
Okay, this is really small, but like the goby fishes, because the goby fishes usually like to protect like holes. So whenever you see a hole, there's probably like a little small gold goby fish that's like guarding it. And that's usually a sign of like mutualism, because the goby fish have mutualism with like shrimps and like the mantis shrimps that are like hiding under the sand to try to make their home. Basically, they're just like in their home and the goby shrimp is like guarding it. So there's a mutualism, because the mantis shrimp gets, I think it's food or something, it provides a home while the goby fish protects. So it gets home, like the goby fish gets that home in exchange for protecting it, basically.
So they kind of benefit each other, like a partnership there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's fascinating, isn't it? When you look at all this underwater creature, they are like, it's not that we try to give meaning to it, but you can see how they behave in a particular way.
Yeah.
And does that make you wonder why?
I always see like how much like it relates to our like everyday life. Because you can see these kind of relationships are really similar to our relationships in real life. Like marriage, for example, like maybe like marriage between the goby fish and the mantis shrimp. So I think that's really cool.
Well, that's interesting analogies. Could you elaborate a bit more on what you observed?
I'm not sure, but that's like the one that's most vivid in my mind at the moment. But I know like another good, like another really well-known kind of mutualism there between that of the anemone fish and also the anemone coral, like the level coral, because how it's like toxic to other fishes, but it's not toxic to the like the anemone fish. It also like gives the anemone fish a home at the same time.
So they kind of got their own little relationship with each other as well.
Yeah.
It's nice. So what keeps you, I mean, obviously you've started diving since the age of 10.
Yeah.
And beside the fact that your families are all divers, pretty chronic addicts, to be honest. What keeps you going diving?
Yeah, for me, definitely whenever I go on social media, I always see these like these travel posts of like people like diving, and they have all these underwater pictures. And as much as it makes me want to like dive myself and travel and go diving, it keeps me at bay because I see all these pictures. I have this huge collection. You know how you can bookmark things on Instagram? I have around like 1,000, I think, in total, like saved posts of like underwater travel or underwater photos that I really hope that we can go to in the future.
What's on your bucket list right now?
Oh, okay.
You can consult your Instagram in case you need to refresh.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. I've always wanted to go to the Bahamas, so definitely there. And Galapagos Island. Let me see. Yeah, there's this one place in Europe. I don't know exactly where it is. I think it's in Spain. I think it's called the Tenerife in Spain. That's my number one place. I really want to go there because it also has extremely blue waters and it's sunny and it's in Europe. I want to go somewhere different because whenever I go diving, it's always in like Southeast Asia. So I want to try to go diving around the world. Oh, also in South Africa, because my dad actually went diving there once and he said it was like completely different compared to like diving anywhere else. So I think that'd be really cool.
So each location has its own special features that you can hammer first when things all open up. I assume that you've already done some research and reading up, even do your own little planning at the back of your head. So what are the key attractions when you go to Bahamas and what would you want to do?
Yeah, so for me, the sharks, because they have a lot of sharks, they have a lot of turtles. And I've seen a couple, like one or two sharks in my diving experiences, but I want to see like a lot more different species of sharks. There was this one time in Malapascua where there was like this rusty shark, but I wasn't like experienced enough to go deep enough. So my parents saw it and I didn't get to see it. And I still remember I was really disappointed. So like now I really want to see like sharks myself, like basically when they come in like little groups. I think that's really cool. So yeah, I definitely want to see shark or if I'm lucky, turtles as well in the Bahamas.
Yeah. For me, I haven't been to Bahamas, but Tiger Beach in Bahamas definitely is on my bucket list because there are lots of tiger sharks and bull sharks as well. And I'm particularly drawn to it because there is a tiger shark called Emma. She has a name and she's well known to the diving community and the shark conservation community. And I remember doing a campaign long time ago where I have access to lots of photographs of sharks taken by well-known photographers. One of them was a picture of Emma the shark and head-to-head facing another diver who had the underwater camera housing, but they were facing each other. And there was one of those amazing photos I've ever seen because it's a very close encounter and Emma seemed to be known in the sense that she does interact with humans. So yeah, look it up.
Wow, yeah, I can imagine how that looks in my head, but I can imagine real, like in real life, the actual picture is amazing.
Okay, so you're still in the middle of studying. If I were put to you, ask you that, what would be your strategy to make sure that I still continue diving whilst you carry on with your educations and doing other things?
Okay, obviously there's breaks. And also during weekends, hopefully I'm not too busy. Usually I like to go diving then with my family. But if I don't have the opportunity in the future, I'm too busy studying for like exams. I think like during spring break or term breaks, I'll be able to dive for sure. And just keep that consistently during the break. But if not, let's just say I graduate from high school and I'm moving on to university. I'm really hoping that I can take a gap year to like a tropical island and just spend time diving there, maybe becoming an instructor even. I think that's really cool.
Actually, that would make sense for you. Make your gap year more worthwhile.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, did you watch the documentary Seaspiracy?
I did, yeah.
Do you want to share what this documentary is about? And
well,
sorry, I just saw two hornbill flew past. I got distracted. Sorry.
Okay, it's about this guy, like the narrator, his name is Ollie. He initially started the documentary, like investigating microplastics in the ocean. What I found was really interesting was it just started off on the basis of microplastics. But the further he actually investigated into it, the more like mystery he unraveled about what was really going on in the background, like behind the scenes underwater. Especially with commercial fishing and how in the end they're all connected to all these major industries and major companies. Yes, it's really opened my mind and made me consider about where we really get our fish.
So, in short, it's not a happy documentary. So, for you, obviously, what is that telling you about what's going on right now? And what does that make you think of your future, having seen that?
Yeah, it really opened my eyes to like how fast the world is moving around us and also how we weren't aware of what was really happening in the background. But yeah, I'm really skeptical because it said in 2048, like there's going to be no sign of life in the ocean. And that's just really scary because we all put our faith in these initiatives, these NGOs, but they really, like when Ali interviewed them, they really just didn't know what to say. They were speechless when they said, when he asked, oh, if you're really raising awareness, like to not eat fish, why do you not put that on your website? And they just didn't know how to answer that. So it just like really opened your eyes to see how they're really like confused and they don't really know what to do. So I actually watched this YouTube video quite recently after watching the documentary about this guy explaining, because he's a marine biologist as well. So he explained like what they didn't include in the documentary, just like some more facts about the fish and like the bycatch and all that. He was also talking about the fish farms as well and like how there's actually like a lot more to it. And also with the bycatch, how people were lying, like the people in the commercial fishing industry, they had to lie about their numbers to pretend, because you know how economy is supposed to grow at a rate. So they had to lie to their bosses that they're actually capturing more than they are. And they were exposed later on, which was like how much are the rate of fishers are just like declining slowly. Yeah. So it's just really surprising for me because I definitely didn't think about that before.
Maybe an array of positive emotion, no doubt about that. So where did that leave you after you finished watching those documentaries?
After I finished watching them, oh my God, I cried. It was just really sad to see like all those animals being killed and like how we actually eat the fish, but we see them being killed. It's a completely different story. And especially when the whales were being killed, that was really sad. It was just like, I can't even imagine how that must have been.
Mind-boggling, but why people don't even want to catch them in the first place, right? If you were to be able to do something about it, say you got even a magic wand, Harry Potter style, and you just swing at it, what would be the first thing you would like for it to happen so that to change?
First, I'd restore all the fishes in our ocean, but then by doing that, I feel like it's still going to continue, like the commercial fishing and everything. But like how they said it, they could try to like, their mission was to try to block those areas, like block the commercial fishing from actually fishing out in these like different areas of the world. And I think if we could do that, we could achieve, like we could have more fish in the ocean by doing that. So if I had a magic wand that had to like block up those areas, and speed up the process, basically.
What does that mean to you when you think about that as a teenager? Because you're only going to be 15 in September. You'll only be on the planet for a decade and a half, and they've got a long way to go. What does that make you feel when you're now looking at all this stuff?
It's just really saddening because also that documentary talked about like a lot of facts that people weren't aware of, with like how the nets were really just like digging up the seabed and destroying the habitat underneath, which really, because the underwater world actually contributes to a lot more than like on land, which is really scary because not a lot of people know about that. A lot of people just think that it's like free, but obviously gives oxygen and everything. But that isn't just the only thing that we need to save. We need to save the ocean and like the environment underneath, because if we destroy that, then basically we like destroy all hope of like our world getting better. What does that word?
Like you said earlier, if you were able to block off certain areas, so stop commercial fishing in certain area, blocking off has its own merit because that would allow that particular area to have the space and time to heal. The power of nature is quite incredible. They can actually heal themselves. So stopping people doing things is one thing, but the ultimate motivation is to allow the ecosystem to recuperate and to regenerate. But the thing is that most people cannot associate that with the ocean because the aquatic system on the planet Earth is 70%. And the majority of people are on scuba divers. But as you being a scuba diver, and I'm sure you are continuing with your scuba diving and progressions and trainings, and this is your power. So what would you use this to help people to look at climate change, environmental sustainability differently?
I think just like the more you capture photos of what's underwater, I do that. I try to do my photography even more and just try to take photos to share with people like above surface, maybe even encourage them to dive themselves as well, and to really see like the world underwater, because you know how photography can capture the moment, capture an image. And that maybe as well, as I know there's a lot of professional videographers, like underwater videographers, maybe they could make some sort of like documentary relating to secrecy or just raising awareness about the creatures underwater and climate change. I think if that really takes off, it would really beneficial to raise awareness.
So like that book, Small Blue World, that little underwater miniature, have you read through them yet?
Yeah, I did. I went through it probably like numerous times already, because every time I look at it, I see something different.
Yeah,
and it's amazing. It's amazing how the author Jason, right, the photographer, how he like views the names of the fish. Like for example, I think it was like the fish or something, like the pipefish or something, to like pretend to cut something along with the other people, is like imitating it as like a saw. I thought that was really cool. As well as the painted frogfish and the little painter painting the frogfish.
Yeah,
so that was really creative. And the fact that he got that at just the right moment. Oh my God, it must have taken so much. Makes sense. But yeah, it's amazing.
Out of the whole book, what was the most amazing picture? I think everybody has that one photo they just, I love that. Just can never get bored of looking at it.
Actually, so many of them. There were so many of them that stuck up to me, which was like the ones that I said before, like the painted frogfish and the pipefish. And then kind of like pretended like the people were at war with the fish, which I think could raise some sort of awareness with what you said with like climate change. So, because that just talked to me a lot.
I'm just taking out my coffee. Where's your coffee?
I actually have a book right here. I think that actually has a lot of potential to convey a message to the audience, like how humans are at war with the fish and how we're destroying our underwater environment. This one as well, like with underwater invasion. I think that idea could really take off.
I think this is the one with the, I'm just showing, this one, the two.
Yeah, that feels so good.
They're just so cool because you got the mantis shrimp that at the back and there's two shots of them in action. But I think to me, the most incredible one is this one.
Oh, yeah.
And also this one. This is incredible because you actually look at there's a shark coming through and then to get into the frame. I'm curious. So out of the book, any particular picture that you really want to ask Jason how he put the photo together, if you want to have questions. And I'm actually going to interview him. So yeah, I'm cheating, collecting questions from you.
Like, I just say generally, how did he lure the subject as a being the underwater creatures to like that specific spot where he could capture the photograph? I know obviously Tolkien is incorporated into it, but there must be something else that could have attracted the creatures, because you know how he got the little figurine to be where they were at exactly the same moment as the creature. Because I think if you place the figurine next to the creature, they'd be scared and they'd run off.
Yeah.
So my big question is, like, how did he manage to attract the creatures to the spot that he wanted to capture the photo?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because especially with this one, like, how could you place the figurine next to the fish where they could have just easily run off? Because that's just amazing.
Yes, those catfish, they actually could just swim away. And he's got
Especially in schools.
Or even like the eel, the garden eel.
Because
they're very shy. Any movement, they just disappear.
Yeah, but they calm down. And then after a while, I always see, because whenever I swim like towards, like over them, they slowly go back down. But then as soon as you pass, they come back up. How did he come up with the ideas? For example, with the hairy frogfish, how did he come up with the gardener curving the hairy frogfish's eyebrows or like hair? I think that's the idea. It just was amazing because I would never have thought of that.
That's cool. There's three parts. The latter part really shows the grim part of the underwater with the trash, with the sharks being left to die. So this is really sending out that much stronger message about what's going on.
Yeah, it's really sad. But it does raise like so much awareness at the same time. And I think it, because that kind of like the fact that the figurines are there, like the small world is already engaging the audience into wanting to see more of those pictures. And I think along with that, like spreading the message, I think is going to grab their attention even more. They'll be even more embedded in their mind because of that.
So in terms of diving career, there is a diving career.
Yeah.
What do you want to do next?
So actually really, I have high hopes of becoming a marine biologist in the future. I think that would be really cool to take.
In terms of marine biology, it's quite a broad area to cover. It can go from the nano micro stuff and into the big stuff. So at the moment, if we were to think about it, what would attract you?
Probably the small things, like the nano thing. I'm gravitating towards that for now, but I think if I were to research more, maybe my opinions would differ.
So marine biology in Europe?
Like all over the world, because I think, like they said, work should be fun. I want to do something that I actually enjoy. I think that would be really fun, just to like work and travel the world and basically just learn and discover new things.
I want to ask you some questions that I ask everybody.
Okay.
So out of your dry bag, not the diving wet bag, what are the three items that you would always, or most likely always, take with you for a diving trip?
Does camera count?
Okay. You clearly have an obsession with camera.
Yeah, I have just a huge bag just for my camera equipment. But I'd bring it because the aspect I love most about photography, obviously, is being able to capture the moment. But yeah, whenever I don't bring my camera there, I always feel like sad, disappointed, and guilty, because whenever I see something that I really want to capture, which is basically everything, there's always some sort of movement underwater, something new that you find every dive that you go on. Like, I always feel that sense of guilt that I could have shot that and I could have taken a photo of and sent it to friends, family, or whoever in the future. It possibly could have been a life-changing photo. You never know. Could have won an award or something. And I'm just like, in my head, I'll just think about, maybe I could have taken a photo. Maybe it could have changed my life somewhat.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you could have captured that particular footage that would make you motivated with all that.
Like a newly discovered species that no one's ever seen before, and I caught it on camera.
Yeah. So
I always want to bring my camera around. And maybe I don't have to always take photos. Thought of having it there along with me just gives me a sense of comfort, because I know that if something really life-changing was really like in front of me, that I could take photos.
That's good. What else?
Okay, so this is actually really important. Say everything on my head. On my head is really important. It's actually really simple, but like a cap and sunglasses for sure, because it gets extremely sunny. I know a lot of dive trips, and I get really hot easily, especially when with such a thick wetsuit on, even though you only have it like up on. But the sun is always like shining on you, and like most days, even if it's cloudy, you can still feel the heat sometimes. It depends on the time that you go, obviously. So the time it's like during summer and it gets really sunny. So it's vital to bring like sunglasses and a cap, because I especially get heat stroke pretty easily. Just having that just makes me feel better. As well as there's water around you, you could just dive in at any time. Usually I do that as well. I cool off and then I wear my cap and sunglasses. So yeah, I have to bring that.
Thanks. The next question, what are your three top tips for safe diving practice?
Okay, so the first one is to always stay calm no matter what. And like I said, don't panic, because in the situation I told you before with the whirlwind and the down current, panic will only make your situation worse, and it really does not help anyone, because if you panic, then everyone around you start panicking, and then no one actually, because panicking can cloud your judgment and cloud your thought. It doesn't help at all, makes the situation worse, and you could risk your life just by panicking and not thinking clearly. Definitely in a situation that could be like a near-death experience.
Okay, what else?
My second tip, and I always tell my dive buddies, usually my family, to always drink lots and lots of water before you dive, because if you're thirsty halfway through your dive, for example, since you're sucking in all this air, like this dry air, there's really nothing, like nowhere else you can go to drink water apart from the salt water, which I don't really recommend. Yeah, so definitely stock up on water, drink lots of it, because yeah, sometimes it can really itch your throat or irritate your throat. My last tip is to have fun, because that's supposed to be a memorable experience, and it's supposed to be something that you want to share. Like maybe you have a story or an experience you want to share with your friends at the end. So enjoy while it lasts.
Next question, what is your greatest fear?
Okay, I have another story about this one. I'm sure you've heard of it. My dad's probably told you about this one. I think it was in Malakoff, actually, but this happened ages ago. I still remember when I first started out diving. So it was the last day before we went on the plane. So obviously, we can't dive before that. So we chose to go snorkeling and enjoy the water while it lasted. So we went off, and I remember seeing a sea snake. And I loved, like, diving down, even if it's not, like, scuba diving. If I'm just in the water, I just love diving down, pretending to be one with the fish. And I pretend like I'm scuba diving, because I used to be really good at holding my breath. And I would just like basically like free dive down and just look at the different creatures and see if I can spot anything new, like nudie branches. And yes, I saw that sea snake. And I was like, whoa, that's really cool, because sea snakes aren't super, super common. So at that time, that sea snake was hunting for food. And that was probably one of the worst timings of my life, because I went down, and as soon as I like went back up, my dad warned me. He was like, do not go so close to this, he's gonna try to bite you. And I was like, I ignored that. I didn't know it was possible what he was saying, because I was like, this isn't durable. I'm like at my home, I'm in the water, the ocean. So I went back down again. I still remember, okay, I was with my dad, my mom was on the opposite side, we were just watching and observing the water down there. This thing like turned around, it shot up directly where my mom was, and she started swimming, and I've never seen her so back in my life. And as soon as the sea snake knew it couldn't catch my mom, it turned back around straight at my dad and I, and we swam extremely fast. And we were so lucky we had flippers, because I did not know what would have happened if we didn't. And I did not look back. No one looked back. We just climbed straight up to the boat with the boat boy. And the boat boy told us, he was like, if you get bitten or you get badly injured, there is no, like, there's no sort of medical attention, no medical services, because you're in the middle of an island. The nearest one is probably 3 hours away from you. And by the time you get bitten, like, you're dead. And so many fish are on like an island, little island. They get bitten by sea snakes all the time, and there's so many unfortunate deaths because of that. And it was so scary because hearing that, it's like my heart just stopped beating for a second. I had a heart attack. I was like, maybe I should listen to my dad's words at the future. But that's definitely something to remember, because whenever we see a sea snake now, we've seen so many like afterwards. Like whenever we just go the opposite direction and not fix it that again, that's not happening, especially not underwater.
Oh, you need to recall all of this and diving incident that only happened in the Grabner's family.
Yeah, we have so many like near death experiences. It's absolutely terrifying.
Okay, I'm going to spin this question at you because you got this fear and then they've not happened. It's just your imagination, the way. Knowing that you've been trained, you know your diamond theory, lots of different things. Okay, you haven't done your first aid yet, but we'll get to that later. But still, based on what you've heard, you've learned, what would you do differently to ensure that you can get over that fear so that that fear doesn't paralyze you? Staying calm is one thing, but a bit more practical than that, than staying calm.
Keeping a safe distance, the underwater creatures, of course. Like that time, I was just too excited. So I kind of need to have some sort of like self-control and also really think about what the safe distance is between like other creatures and yourself. It's like avoid, because you know, you're just supposed to like look at them. If you get too close, they might think that you're trying to hurt them or hunt them down, and they might come at you. So like the smart thing to do, obviously, is to just know your limit. You know, how far you're actually supposed to stay between them. And you just don't want to risk anything.
Yeah, that's very important. Thank you. Next question. What's your greatest extravagance?
I've been actually taking up a lot of hobbies during summer and beforehand when we had online learning. So my biggest hobby right now is the guitar. So I've been picking up the guitar and I've been spending lots of time. And actually, I've done a lot of my allowance buying music sheets. I love learning different songs. Now, I've been practicing like on a daily basis because I always look forward to picking up and trying new music. And it's also been a lot of fun because I've recently purchased a new laptop. And it's one of the best ways for me to be able to connect with my friends, especially when a lot of them are like abroad. And it's so much fun to talk to them during the evenings because my busy schedule during summer, it's really hard for me to keep my social life active, especially when I don't have that much time to hang out with them. So it gives me the opportunity to connect. But I think that is one of my greatest.
So you actually use your allowances, save it out to buy your laptop.
Yeah. Wow. And it's like my dad sponsored some bit of it for my, as a gift, as like a future birthday gift.
Kudos to you. You actually made that effort. The next question, what do you value most in your friends?
100%, I'd say loyalty is one of the most important for them. I'm extremely lucky to have friends, like, and amazing people who have been there for me and whom I can put my trust in. I also appreciate the fact that they're always so interested and they keep up with my constant rambling about, like, my dive trip and my photos. And they're always just super engaged and I'm really happy because it really boosts my spirits up when they ask me about it at school.
Have you managed to convince any of them to learn scuba diving?
I was really happy during the summer week this year. We couldn't go abroad, obviously, because traveling was really tough at that time. Still is now, but we were staying in Hong Kong for discovery week and we got to choose what we wanted to do. For example, you could sign up to go baking or go sailing or go wakeboarding, and scuba diving was one of the options. And I think it was relatively popular because there's only like a limited amount of spaces. I was really happy when one of my closest friends actually signed up for scuba diving. And I was like, wow, it was fun to learn it with her. Like, obviously I'm taking a different course because I've already taken scuba diving. But yeah, it was fun to be in the same boat with her, being her on a boat and just like going down, descending with her. Just like being able to like go through that experience again with her was just amazing.
Oh, wow. So were you like checking on her to make sure she set up the gear properly?
Yeah, and we could actually talk about, because after dives, you can talk about like underwater. Oh, I saw this. Yeah. Did you see this? It was really fun. Like, we always ask, what did you see underwater?
Oh, wow. So it's actually really nice, right, when you had a friend that your own age group, not the same age as your parents. They're lovely.
Yeah, and I always had an idea in the future that we'd all go on like some sort of diving trip together. I thought that was super fun.
That's nice though.
So are you encouraging your friend to continue like with her diving career
and hopefully find it fun and still maybe go on some diving trips?
Say your creative side decides to also produce podcasts. So you and I swap seats and you're the host of the podcast. What question would you have for me to answer?
What would be the moment the most interesting? So I think you've had a lot. So like same question you asked me was the most memorable dive you've had or like most memorable experience you've had underwater.
I think I would say out of all the diving trips, they're all memorable. They're all like memorable in a different way.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. The one trip that really made a unique space in my memories is the dive trip that made over 10 years ago to Timor-Leste. It was a memorable one because the trip was so unique. A, Timor-Leste, I didn't really know where that was. I literally had to look up Atlas to find where that is. And then it was introduced to me by a friend. He was the one who organized the whole diving event. It was an underwater photography competition. I was invited to join as a support diver. So I would dive with a participant in the competition as a photographer. That itself is unique because I never thought of going to any underwater photography competition and then going to a country where I've never been and it was not easy to get to. You have to bring your gear because there's no gear rental. And also it's a country where at that time when I went, they still had UN troops stationed in Timor-Leste. And so it was unique in the sense where we actually got to get on the helicopter, the military helicopter with a UN mark on the side and
wow,
to scout the dive site from the air. So that's unique because I've not been on any other trips. And then being transported in UN vehicle, that's another unique scenario. And to ensure our safety, they have another group of police that are international police. They get to station in Timor-Leste at the time. It's a very unique experience to be in a country which is very new, very young, and still in the process of stabilizing itself and in the process of building itself up. And then the diving was another experience. The biodiversity was just incredible. And I think because it was not very commercialized, there weren't that many people knew about Timor-Leste, let alone scuba diving. That's definitely one trip that made to this day that has so much different kind of experience that came with it. Oh, other diving experiences are incredible, but this has just got that special memory.
I love how like different areas that you go to for diving all have their different experiences to go with it.
Yeah.
But especially like that one, like that region that you went to, for sure, that was definitely something different. But it must have been something like a great experience for you.
I think that's what diving is about. A stepping stone to experience something else you wouldn't have otherwise experienced.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the sequel where I have a lot more stories to share. Obviously now I'm like still growing up, but yeah, I'm looking forward to a lot of new experiences in diving in the future.
You have been listening to Surface Time, Confessions of a Diving Junkie. My guest today was Natasha Rapner, who is to date the youngest guest on the show. It is possible that we could be having a marine biologist and renowned underwater documentarist in the making, assuming the role as an influencer, raising awareness constructively through photography, scuba diving, and her love and passion for ocean waters. Surface Time is executively produced by Noetic Production and music by Dress Studio. If you have enjoyed our Surface Time chat, please show us some love and subscribe. And even better, share with your friends and family so that they get to be inspired. And if you would like to share your stories on Surface Time, we would love to hear from you. Please email us to faith@servicetimechat.com.